Hi, I'm Liz Cully, and welcome back to Cool, Cool, Cool. Each week, I give you a glimpse into what I think is cool and chat with a ton of people that are definitely cool. No topic is off bounds unless, I guess, it's not cool. Welcome to Cool, Cool, Cool. You know, when I first moved to Los Angeles, a year into it, I used to go to the most fancy bachelor viewing parties.
Yes.
At a very now famous director, showrunner's home. And to have really one of the true stars of Bachelor Nation here, I'm gooped, I'm gagged.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy that you're here, Colton Underwood.
I wanted to go to that viewing party. How was it?
It was great. It was like a lot of famous people watching. It was kind of in the early days of The Bachelor. You were probably still like, I don't know, in college. I mean, this is like 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah. So it's way before you. Yeah.
It was cool. It's wild. And I actually live next to, I didn't tell you this the other day when I was at your house. I live next to like one of the original producers of The Bachelor. Why did you go on The Bachelor? Like, how did that happen? I have to just know. Yeah. I haven't asked you. Like, were you like scrolling on the internet? And you're
No.
Okay.
I was coming out of football and I was on practice squads for 3 years in the NFL. And then just like randomly was like, I'm going to go do this. And I think now that I've had years of reflection, it's like, I loved hopping from one thing to the next. I loved flying on to finding my next project and really getting into it. And I was like, I'm just going to take a year off and see what happens. I'm going to have fun. So I went to the 16th Street Mall, like this open call thing that they had. And it was only women there because they're casting for a Bachelor season.
Got it.
And I was like, I walked in and I was like to the girl, I was like, should I be here? She's like, yes. And like grabbed me and went up to the room. And like within a minute, I had like a camera on me. And I'm like, oh, okay, what's going on here? And then, you know, 2 months later, I'm on a plane to LA and getting ready to be on the show.
I mean, because I think
it was 25 when like I went through that process, like the casting process. So some people forget to like
in your 20s,
you still have a lot. And for me, especially, I was like emotionally very, very immature because I only played football. Physically, I was very mature. All of like the other, I was not a very well-rounded individual. I had my one or two things that I was very good at. And then like the rest of life was like a mystery to me.
Was it that you had seen the show and you're like, that seems fun? Or was it that you had a little bit of a bug for Hollywood?
I don't know if it was a bug. I had like, I think I saw it and I was like, oh, they travel. Cause I never got to travel with football.
Got it.
So like, I was like, oh, they get to travel. They get to do all this. And also just like, I thought entertainment seemed like a fun category to get. I don't know. I go back and forth with this, but I feel like sports is entertainment.
It is entertainment. The
money in football is from the entertainment and TV contracts. It's not from ticket sales and concessions, like in jersey sales, all that. These TV contracts. I mean, look, I think CBS and Paramount just paid billions of dollars for the Big Ten rights. Like now you're seeing at the collegiate level, but the money is in entertainment. So I was like, I want to go try to do this. This seems fun. And then I sort of liked it. So now I'm here.
And now you're here.
Yeah.
Now you have this wild ride of TV entertainment, hosting reality. I mean, it's like, what a journey. And really only 6 years, right?
Yeah. Oh, has it already been six? It has been 6 years.
It only gets worse, Colton.
I know.
Wait till you're my age.
Yikes.
It's sand. It's like sand. It just time evaporates through your fingers. And then all of a sudden you're like, I have a terrible metabolism and I want to die. I mean, I'm just kidding. That's just my experience. I think your metabolism is top notch. I don't think you're ever going to have a problem. I wish that I was a child athlete because I think all of that training, exercise, like blood, oxygen in your blood, it'll just stay with you forever.
See, I can look at a weight and gain 10 pounds. We're just like, because my body has such muscle memory that as soon as I start lifting again, I just blow up. Because when I played it to like 265 pounds.
And that's wild.
Now I'm at 220. So like, but if I had to go to the gym, like my gym regimen has changed a ton. It's only body weight, a lot of cardio, a lot of stretching, more functional movements. But if I started like benching and squatting every day, I bet I can get back up to 250 within like a month.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild. Do you love the gym?
I do. It's like therapy for me.
Got
it's one of my like, one of my venters, like the ways that I vent.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I felt that way. In the pandemic, I decided I was never going to go back to Barry's Boot Camp ever again.
Oh, they're opening one in the Valley. I'm really excited about it.
All right, fine. Maybe I'll see.
I've never been to a Barry's, but I'm excited about that because.
Oh, boy. The boys are going to go ballistic if they go in there in the Valley and you're there.
Oh.
They would die. Yes. I would be like, oh, my God.
Is Barry's a gay scene?
Big time.
Oh, I know the owner, the creator. I know him, but. I didn't know it was like a whole gay following.
Oh,
I
yeah.
love it. Great. Let's do it.
Yeah. I mean, por que no, as they say. Well, boom. That's actually a good, before we dovetail into that, because I feel like you and I have a lot of similarities for a lot of reasons. We're both going through our fertility and family journeys.
Yes.
But
yes.
I also feel like you and I are similar in the sense that we're like gay, queer, but like perhaps it's been a little bit difficult for us to identify with traditional, like, gay queer culture all of the time. I've definitely felt like quite a bit of an outsider in the queer community, even though I feel like I am so visible and so in it. And you, being that you kind of started your entertainment career in really one of the most, I would say, iconic American heterosexual love franchises.
Yeah, that's an accurate description of The Bachelor.
You know?
Yeah.
And you know, I was going back and watching your coming out declaration on, again, one of the most iconic American morning TV shows.
Yeah.
And watching you, and it, for me, I'm like, oh, God. I mean, my heart just kind of like goes deep into my chest because I can't imagine what that was like for you. Especially under the circumstances that you had talked about, you know, getting emails and essentially getting blackmailed to come out, which I'm so against on so many levels. So I'm sorry. Can you see sort of the positive or really the excitement in like learning all of these things about gay culture, like that Barry's Boot Camp is gay?
Oh, I'm loving everything that I'm learning. And it took me a while to sort of educate myself and, you know, you alluded to it, but yeah, I didn't really feel like I was a part of the community early on.
Yeah.
And I also just didn't see a ton of representation of guys. I don't know. I know that there's been many guys like me that have come out, but like I, from a small town, you know, a Christian man who wanted to have a family and was an athlete, there's not a lot of gay football players. So
yeah, no, not
I didn't
at
really
all.
Have any representation for like sports, religion, and you know, fatherhood. So
sure.
I didn't feel like there was really a lane for me to come out.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, you know, as far as me not really feeling a part of the community, it was more so in those three pillars. But now that I am, it's been incredible. I have like the most diverse group of friends that I've ever had. And it's just, I've learned so much and I'm still learning. I learn something new every day about gay culture and it's cool and freeing and liberating and like, great.
Well, we've just started our friendship, but let me tell you, you will know all about the L word by the end of our friendship.
I know.
Okay. I will make that happen.
Let me grab my burrito real quick.
Oh, yes. No, no.
Sorry.
Well, what is in your burrito order? That's what we really want to know, Golden.
My burrito order? Yeah, I love a good bacon burrito from Erewhon.
Like a
it's like if
burrito.
I had like an LA thing that I do, it's my Erewhon burrito smoothie order.
What's your smoothie order?
Just a peanut butter blast, but with whey protein.
That's my order.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't do the plant protein.
I can't do plant. Oh, and by the way, thank you for that protein powder.
Oh, of course.
Rachel loves it.
Yeah.
Strawberries and cream. She was like, this is great.
Just ingredients. It's the best. It's the cleanest protein. I'm obsessed with it.
What do you put in your smoothie?
Ice, almond milk, blueberries, peanut butter, and oats.
No banana.
Every once in a while, I put banana in. Yeah.
Why oats?
I like carbs. I think you have to have, like, I know some people do grain-free, carb-free, like, diets. I like to have carbs.
Well, yeah, you're.
Because it helps with the energy, my energy levels. I think it's a good vehicle to help deliver the proteins and, like, repair your body.
God, you must have had to learn so much shit about nutrition. Being an athlete.
It's been hard because like I haven't always had the best relationship with food. I like would see a plate and instead of seeing food, I see 25 grams of protein, 50 carbs, 20 fat. Like I sort of break it down in like the nutrients versus actually
enjoying food. It.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy food now?
I do. Yeah, I had In-N-Out last night.
Ooh, what's your In-N-Out order?
Oh, I did two double-double animal styles with lettuce wrap.
Two. God, I would love to just be an athlete boy like you. Yeah. What a dream.
But see, then I just go to the gym today and I just run a little bit and do some body weight, some push-ups, some pull-ups.
And like live your life.
I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. When I was coming out, I moved to Los Angeles and it's because I had met a woman in San Francisco, totally fell in love with her. Yeah. I was already on my way to move to LA and she happened to live in LA. And when I came to LA and was like going out in the gay scene, mm-hmm. I was like, oh no, honey. I don't know what the fuck all, I was like, this ain't it. And I was really young. I was 25, just like you were.
Yeah.
And I got approached at the Abbey by a reality producer to be on The Real L Word, which you obviously don't know what that is. So I will tell you. It was a reality version of The L Word, which I've mentioned 1,000 times, which was a group of lesbian women here in LA. And it really just chronicled their dating life. But these girls were like low-key having sex on TV.
Wow.
And making out and doing—
What channel was this on?
Showtime.
Oh, you can do anything on Showtime.
You can. Yeah. You know what's even more wild is Showtime, or was it HBO After Dark or like Showtime app? That's like porn, basically. Yeah. It's wild.
I've had a few late nights when I was in my teenage years.
Yeah, Showtime, obviously. The Playboy channel, get out of here. Oh, I was like, oh my God, this is great. And I remember in the same way, like being interested, I'm like a kid actor. So I was like acting and I was really in, I was like, oh my God, this could be so amazing. I would have like such a platform. But I wasn't out.
Yeah.
And I just was like, you know what? I don't know if this is the way I should come out. And so I was really nervous and scared.
You didn't do it, did
you? I didn't do it.
Good. Smart.
I know. I didn't do it. I'm glad
because I've been asked why there was, you know, like why there I didn't continue on with like the Netflix show. And it's like, I didn't want people following my dating life. I've already been there, done that. And it was not healthy for me. I don't think it's healthy for a lot of people.
Are the dates, did you actually, listen, like I know, I also, some people will say to me now that, you know, I'm married to a woman, like, were the relationships you had with men real? I'm like, yeah, they were very real. Like, I mean, I also would consider myself probably more like bisexual than lesbian or open or whatever.
On the spectrum.
Yeah, on the spectrum.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you able to formulate real connections in a bachelor set? Okay.
Totally. Yeah, especially because you don't have your phone, you don't have access to the outside world, you're sort of like in it. So everything that I, at least from my season, I can only speak on mine, but like everything in mine was very genuine and real. There's a few things that you have to do like for TV and or like, you know, people are like, why did you keep her so long? It's like, I'm going to be here filming this show. I at least want to be entertained. Like, you can't like eliminate them all and have your final four by episode 3. You have to keep certain people and they're still good humans and good, like, and could be friends, you know? So,
yeah. I mean, before you came out, was there ever a world, and I felt like this too. And I was like, I could very much end up with a man, have a family, do the whole thing. There was a time for me, I think, because I had genuine connections with men and like whatever.
It's confusing though, too.
It is confusing.
It's confusing because you're like, wait, I actually do feel something, but what does this mean? And it's a hard time, and especially when you're still in your, like, you're in your 20s, it was hard. Like, I'm just like, it's not supposed to be clean cut, I guess.
Yeah.
Just figure yourself out.
And there were moments where I was like, similar to you, I like knew I wanted a family. I think you and I are quite similar in the sense we have a lot of traditional values and like our life that way. Like, I think people always would be sort of surprised to know it's like, got my wife, I've got my little rescue dog. Like trying to get pregnant. I like would like the 2 kids and I like living in the suburbs now. Like, you know, I mean, I was a wild 20-year-old, somewhat in my 30s too person, but you know, there were lots of men that I was like, yeah, I actually could like see this working out. Like, what does that mean? I was very confused.
Right.
And then I've had people sort of say like, well, were those relationships not real? Or like, I guess you were gay the whole time. And I'm like, I do think it is a spectrum. Was there ever a moment in like during Bachelor or before where you were like, I can just suppress all of these other feelings and like make this work?
Oh yeah. That was my goal with Bachelor, was this basically like, I will become straight and this is how I'm going to do it. And obviously I know that's not how it works now, but when you're like closeted and so deep and you really don't want to be gay, you do things like that. And it's not healthy for you, your mental health. It's not, you just don't put yourself in a great position in life. So for me though, I really was leaning into the further along I get in this relationship, the more that I am going to become straight.
Yeah.
And that's not the case.
It's not.
Doesn't work like that.
It doesn't. God, who knew, right? I know, me too. I mean, and you learn a lot about yourself, I think, in those moments, how far you can push yourself, who you really are.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Not all of us are in a position, though, that we become famous on the biggest franchise that's supposed to be all about love and heteronormativity. Yeah. You mentioned in an interview I watched that you were forced to come out to like your team.
Yeah.
Your manager, your agent, your publicist first.
Yep.
It's hard to equate your personal, I think it's hard for a lot of people, especially the listeners, to understand that your personal life can be so enmeshed with business. And that's scary too, because, yeah, you know, you had mentioned you had like taken this year off to go on The Bachelor. I think in another interview I watched recently, you talked about how you had this like sick job opportunity to sell like dental implants, which by the way, I would like that job. I want to work in the medical device industry, like, fuck entertainment, get me out of here. I know I'm really good at it, but like, I want to sell like a defibrillator. They make so much money.
Yeah, the job offer was insane.
Like bananas. Yeah. But your love life was your business.
Yeah.
How did they react to you when you told them the truth and came out to them?
I think a lot of things started making sense for them. I think, you know, it was sort of like an order of operations thing. And there was just certain things that were going on behind the scenes that I sort of had to just like give, obviously, like my publicists and my management and my agents, like a heads up of like, hey, I'm not going to be able to do this commercial or this campaign or this thing because I'm going, like, I moved back to Colorado. I was going to see a psychologist and a therapist 2 times a week. It just was, I was not in a good place. And so I had to sort of give them a heads up of what was going on. And I didn't really tell them everything at first. They knew I was going through something. And then, you know, just as things were starting to like unwind and things were getting in the media, it sort of had just sat them down. I was like, this is what's happened. And it made a lot of sense for them. And they were very supportive. You know, obviously they stood by me through all of it and like helped me and supported me and loved on me, which was great. And that gave me the confidence too to, you know, go on to tell my family.
Yeah.
Just because my team was so great. So yeah, it was out of order for sure. And I wouldn't have wanted it that way. But
sure,
you know, I think for me, it was actually a good thing that it happened that way. Because I sort of had like a warm up with my professional team and coming out versus just going straight into like the family of it all.
Yeah. What were you feeling like that morning that you went on national television and talked about? Like, what was that morning like?
At that point, I was just ready to get it out there because I think, you know, I've been burned in the past and getting blackmailed was never fun. So like, it sort of relieved a lot of stress for me.
Got it.
I was like, oh, I can actually like just say this and it can come from me and it doesn't have to come from whoever was trying to do this to me and or like, I don't have to worry about a photo or rumors or tabloids or anything like that. I could just like, I can sit there and sort of say my truth and go from there.
Yeah. And take away the power of it.
Yeah. Because
secrets hold a lot of power.
Yeah.
Which sucks.
And we're in the industry too. Like, you know, someone told this to me, and it's sort of my rule of thumb from here on out is like, it's your story to tell and either you tell it or somebody else is going to tell it for you. And I think like that puts up things in perspective. And like, look, there's mega superstars that can get away with not having to talk to press at all, i.e. like the Taylor Swifts. And
yeah,
but they have a team behind the scenes that's working on that narrative. They're not just like not doing press. They have like a whole group of people who actually steers that conversation and that cog.
And makes deals. I mean, a big part of Cool, Cool, Cool is learning industry secrets. And I mean, I don't really divulge a lot, but enough. Like, you're right. There's a whole business behind not doing press.
Yeah.
That is press, actually. So you're totally right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was sort of like, yeah, just navigating all of that. And I think that was ultimately why I made the decision. It's like, this is my story. I'm going to have to own it. I need to, you know, in a weird way, come clean. Like, this is me. And, you know, it was scary and nervous, but it was so worth it.
Well, you did get a lot of support from the queer community. One of those people was me, because I posted a picture of you the morning that you did. This is so crazy. And I didn't tell you this when we recorded your podcast on purpose. Yeah. But my previous show was with Embassy Row with Andy Cohen's assistant, Darren yep. Karp. We had a show called Scissoring Isn't a Thing for years. And I ran the Instagram and I posted a cute little picture of you. It was, in the 3 years that we did that podcast, the most liked and commented post. Aww. And we all were like, well, fuck, like, what about, you know what I mean? What about us? And it was so funny. I posted the picture of you and was like, congratulations, like, we love you or something like that. And the comments were so positive.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the more the Bachelor Nation comments are very wild. And very. I hate it for you, because I have followed you for a long time. I like see your stuff and I'm like, I'm going to kill all these people. Like, I'm going to go after all these people on the internet.
It's not bad now. Like, I think the people who have stuck with me from Bachelor are the good ones.
Correct. Yeah.
which
is great.
I'm not mad at it at all.
No. And it's amazing to see. But there was, I think, you know, a lot of queer folks that were like, that will always come out and support someone that has been literally dragged out of the closet. I think because all of us have our own stories that we've been through. A lot of them, unfortunately, are pretty traumatic for people. And I can only imagine you did it with such grace and you're so light and bright and happy. Like, you can feel your energy.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine the trauma of like dealing with that shit. I just like I said, I watched you on there, a couple years ago, and I was just like, oh my God, this poor little sweetie baby angel. Like, oh God. Like, I just couldn't imagine having to do that, because I know for me, like, when I had people tell people I was queer, and it sucks. It's like, it is the scary thing, no matter how big or small the coming out is. Yeah. Coming out is really difficult.
I mean, at that point, I had thick skin. I also had a really good support system, and still do in just in a different way. But yeah, I was sort of built and prepared for what was to come. And it was overwhelmingly positive. But you know how it is, like, the negative voices always seem to be the loudest at that time. So I just had a really good support system that would like tune me out of that and help me. And it was actually really, for me, it was a very positive coming out experience.
Well, we supported you. And I was like, oh my God, we were just in a meeting. I remember with the marketing team, and they're like, what was the most liked pick? I'm like, Colton Underwood. And you know, like, and here you are years later.
Full circle.
Well, now you're on a new adventure. You're on a new adventure to daddyhood.
Yeah.
I love your podcast. Thank you for having me on it. I love that you are talking about your journey into building your family in the next chapter. Your life. It's so vulnerable. You really are like one of the most vulnerable people I've ever met, if you think about it. Like, you are not hiding anything about yourself, your life, your journey at all. You're bringing so many things, you know, to the surface, like, you know, issues or how do you can change your sperm quality? What has been the, you and I talked about all the things like we don't know, which, by the way, you were talking to me about mock cycles. And I got on a call with my fertility doctor that afternoon. We had like a check-in.
Yeah.
And my wife was patched in. I'm like, well, can you talk to me about a mock cycle? And we like hung up the phone. And Rachel's like, what are you even talking about? I didn't even know. I'm like, well, I was with Colton this morning and he was telling me about it. We're learning so much. What's the craziest thing that you've learned about either parenthood or becoming a parent that you didn't know that is still like, wow, I can't believe that more people don't know about that?
Well, I'll start by saying, like, the reason why I'm doing the podcast is because nobody else was talking about it. And I was like, well, this sort of been my thing in life. It's like, I'll just talk about it because nobody else is. And hopefully it helps people. And I think it does. And it has been. I think just overall, the misconceptions that surround fertility right now are so great. And it's such sort of like a mystery and people don't get it. I think the overall thing, though, that I'm focused on and like trying to switch the narrative on is, right now, IVF is always viewed as a, oh shit, last chance. Like, we've got it. Like, it's IVF for nothing now because we've exhausted every other option. When the conversation should be, IVF should be used as a tool. And people should look into IVF, even if they're not like wanting to fully pursue IVF. it should just be another tool, another resource for you, a straight couples, queer couples, however you want, whenever you want to approach it, and reframe it as preventative medicine instead of like a last resort, if that makes sense.
Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah.
Because I went into it and people are like, are you doing IVF? When I first started talking about it.
When you hear IVF, they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. Yes. You have to do IVF.
And I was like, we're doing IUI, which it, for those that don't know, it's essentially, for lack of a better term, like medically assisted turkey basting.
Yeah.
I think that's like the easiest way to describe it. And I'm like, we're going to do that. That's what I'm going to do. And I've interviewed a ton of people and that's what they did. And I was like, that'll be great. And then we really sat down with our doctor. We switched doctors, which, you know, is like a whole crazy thing.
Yep.
And she was like, listen, do you know how many kids you want? And I was like, well, I don't know. I'm like, I come from a family of four kids.
Yeah.
I love having, you know, multiple siblings to talk shit about the other siblings. I love multiple siblings to talk shit about our parents. I mean, it's like a great support system,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, ideally at least two. I'd love to have two kids. My siblings and I are so close, you know, but whatever. And she's like, I really think you should consider IVF for these reasons, for the reasons that, like, think about how old you are now versus what, like how old you're going to be when you want another kid. Think about the industry that you're in. You're working in a very, very high pressure job in entertainment.
Like, totally.
Think about all of these things and how, you know, I don't know if you have 6-7 months to try IUI and, you know, et cetera. And it really, the way she framed it was exactly what you're talking about as a tool. And I've never thought of it in that way until you just said it. And that's such a, like a gentle, kind way of thinking about IVF as a tool versus a last resort.
Yeah. I think that's sort of been my goal, and it's sort of been the through line of daddyhood, is the doctors and the lawyers and just humanizing the fertility experience for people, because it seems so medical, it seems so intimidating, it seems so black and white, and it's not. It's complicated and emotional and challenging and hard, and it's, you know, you're not alone. So that's sort of why I wanted to talk about it.
We talked on your podcast about how we picked our donor. Which was, you know, weird. It's like very crazy looking through profiles and kind of the things that we were looking for initially and how that developed. What were you and Jordan really looking for in a donor?
At first we sort of, we didn't like have major differences, but we'd like prioritize things differently, which I think is normal in most
couples.
Totally
normal. I was like hot.
The one.
Metabolism, height, standardized testing. Rachel's like, good person. I'm like, all right. Good people.
our overlap. Our overlap was, we just want somebody who is adventurous. And
really?
Yeah, spontaneous. And you can't always like get that out of like the profile that you get. But you can if you sort of like look into it and are studied abroad at certain times. And yeah. There was a lot of adventure in her.
That's such an interesting attribute.
Yeah. We just wanted somebody spontaneous and fun. We both believe in nurture versus nature. So like no matter what egg, you know, we end up getting, we're going to love our baby as much as we can.
Yeah. Of course. I mean, we are already parents as we have dogs.
Yeah.
Little rescue. I mean, your dogs are so sweet.
They know it too.
They do know it. So is mine. Ravioli's getting worse. She's like, she's
how old is Ravioli?
She's 3.
Got it.
Yeah. Prime, hot, like pandemic dog. Yep. Took her to the Conde Nast office the other day. Boy, oh boy, was she cute. She just follows me around wherever I go. Yeah. She'll hop up on a chair. Like if she was here right now, she'd want to be right here next to me.
Yeah.
She looks like a 10-pound golden retriever. She's so cute.
So cute.
No, I know. But she's like a total
Ravioli
shit.
Is such a great name.
Isn't it? Thank you. Who knows what? Well, let's talk about the next thing. Do you guys have names? Don't tell me the names,
yes,
obviously. But do you have names?
Yeah.
What was that process like? Because that has been hard for Rachel.
We have names because we know our genders too. So,
okay.
Because you, through genetic testing, you get the assigned gender at birth. So we know like our options and what we have and what's we're going to put in, and sort of we can make our, that's the other thing with IVF is you could be very intentional in building your family, which I think is beautiful.
No boys allowed in this household, this lesbian household. I'm just kidding. I like, don't care. Rachel only likes boy names.
Yeah.
and her names are insane. They are not what I expected from her. Were the did you guys have like a pretty easy chat about different names?
We have a shared name folder. We actually are a shared note folder. But then there's this app. If you want to download it, you can swipe, and if you match, and it just pairs you with your partner. So Jordan and I are on this, and if we swipe right and we like it, it matches it for us. They're like, congratulations, this name's actually a match, you and your husband. So you can do it separately.
Really?
Yeah, you either swipe that you like it or don't like it. And then when you swipe that you like something and your partner likes something too, it matches and throws it in your name list.
There is something to be said about meeting a baby and seeing if that name fits them. My name originally was Eleanor after my grandmother.
I don't know if you're an Eleanor.
I'm definitely not an Eleanor. And then it was my dad that was like, dude, we got to change this to Elizabeth, which is, and I don't, I mean,
and then now you go by Liz.
I go by Liz.
Yeah.
So the government, my parents, the police.
Yeah.
When I'm in trouble with my wife, that's when I'm the called police. Elizabeth. Yeah. Elizabeth, you know, the government. I'm like, well, if I hear Elizabeth, I know I'm in trouble. So you didn't have a hard time then. You've got the names or a couple options. Ish.
Yeah. I think we're not like fully committed. 80%?
80%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're close.
Did you make any concessions?
Yes. There's like, you know, when you're building nameless, there's like always that one or two names that like were not great to you in your past. You're like, nope, can't do this name. Nope, can't do that name. I had a bad experience with this person once. That happened to me a few times with the names that we were working with. I was like, so it's sort of like a hard, and our sort of rule in everything in life and how we communicate with each other is like, you know, if it's important to him or it's important to me and I don't have a strong, I'm not going to just fight. Like there was nothing strong with feelings towards names he wanted to cut and vice versa. We're like, cool. And we just sort of don't, it's over. And there's no reason to like bicker and go back and forth with something that's not that big of a deal. Like if you can find another name, find another name.
Listen to this evolved husband over here. I mean,
maturity.
Let me tell you. I know. Trust me. Are you kidding? Rachel and I have been together for 10 years. At this point, I'm like, whatever. There is one name that I'd like her to circle back on, but I don't think she will. So we've moved on.
Yeah.
Will I hate her for the rest of her life? Sure. But you know what? It's fine. I'm the one who controls everything we eat in the household. So it's up to her.
She's going to be having leftovers for a while after.
No, she's like, are you kidding me? She's a gourmet chef. I am over here. So sports, we've got hosting, you've done reality TV. You're now hosting this incredible podcast, but something that I love is music. Mm-hmm. I sang for years and now sing pretty much exclusively in the car, but music has been such a huge sense of release. It's been an amazing, just like, I love music, right? Who doesn't? And like, what a weirdo if you're like, I hate music. That would be strange. But you were on the reality show, What Song Is That? Name That Tune.
Yes.
And I was gooped, gagged, shocked, really impressed that you were able to name a song in 8 notes. Do you play the piano?
No, I play no musical instruments. I just listen to a lot of music.
Eclectic music or like?
I'm all over the board. Like, love a good holiday soundtrack.
Really?
Oh yeah.
A good holiday. Like are we doing Mariah Carey or are we like?
Mariah Carey's great, but like I'm all over the board with it. So
like Christmas music.
Christmas music. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's that. There's pop.
Sure.
Sort of kicking myself because I didn't get Chandelier by Sia. But like those ones are hard because like those songs are so synthetic. Like, you know, when you hear it live, it sounds so different than the originals. So it's harder to like translate it when you're in a studio listening to it on a piano with a live band versus like a computer technology of like how the song's actually built. So I did better at sort of the more musical songs.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I love NPR's Tiny Desk series.
Yes, it is my dream.
I know somebody listening and I say this on my Instagram all the time because I worked in music. Somebody has got to get me to an NPR Tiny Desk. Yes,
yeah.
I've missed... Like, I missed Juvenile, I missed Justin Timberlake, I've missed Brandy, I mean, it's Babyface, I would have died. But you, like, we have to talk about The Masked Singer.
Yeah.
Are you surprised that people didn't guess more quickly who you were?
People did, a little bit. But yeah, people did.
How hot is that costume? I have so many questions. How hot is the costume?
Yeah, but I at least, like, mine wasn't skin tight. I obviously can move around in mine a little bit. I say that, but I actually couldn't, just because it was so big and bulky. I couldn't fully move, but it wasn't like sucking, like touching me. So like I could at least like
breathe a little bit. Did you have to audition for that song? Because everybody baseline can sort of sing or at least carry a tune. You didn't have to audition.
Not really.
What if you were like what if you really could? I mean, you can kind of sing on there.
I don't know. I just like, I worked hard. I had a vocal coach.
You did?
Yeah. They gave me a vocal coach and I worked really hard with them. And I just remember vividly, right before I got voted off, they handed me like four songs and they're like, here's for next week. And I was like, all right, I think I'm done. I can't learn four songs. I was like,
really?
People can learn four songs. I just like, I focus on one thing and dial into that one thing. So like the fact that they were like, here's this song, here's the next week, here's like, if you go into a head-to-head elimination, you need to have this one ready. And then here's like your group song. And I was like, I don't think I can do this.
So did you not do it at all?
Well, no, I got eliminated.
Oh, so you were like good to go.
Totally. Like there's a part of me that was like, this was fun. I had a great time. This is my time.
Wait, did you get to pick any of your songs? Did you give any suggestions?
Yeah. I mean, it sort of went through the profile and it's sort of a conversation that you have with producers, but I loved the two songs that I had. They were just great.
How is it? Do you think you can really like belt and go for it because you're masked?
Oh, yeah. But it's like, I don't know. I had no expectations. Also, I wasn't really trying to impress anybody. I was just doing it because it was outside of my comfort zone. And weirdly, music is so therapeutic to me. And it was just like fun to just feel like a kid. Like I got to do something so silly, so goofy, so fun in my 30s. And I'm just like, why not?
Do you know who the other people are?
No. They keep you. And I'm learning now. Like I just texted somebody who got eliminated, you know, last week. And I was like, you were on this? Because like, I also have to be careful because you were not allowed to like spoil it to other people too.
Well, yeah, no spoilers but here.
When people are eliminated, you can then talk to them about it. So it's fun. It's such a fun show.
It is crazy. Where do you shoot that show?
Here in town.
Universal?
I don't even know. To be honest with you, I don't even, I just got picked up. I had to wear my little mask and then I just went to the studio and
To wear a mask in the car?
Yeah. So when the car, the first time the car comes, they run a producer out and like they hand you the sweatshirt that don't talk to me and they put the mirror visor on. So I had to wear the mirror visor, gloves and long pants so that they couldn't see my skin.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Because that is how secret the Masked Singer is.
Still. It's why it's such a success. You never know who's going to be on it.
Who's the most shocked? Did you watch the show before?
Well,
a little bit, obviously.
Kevin Hart was the first one eliminated out of my grouping.
Were you like,
because he self-eliminated. That's the only reason I didn't go home week one. Thank you, Kevin. it's such a fun show that I think it's such an easy yes from any celebrity out there. It's like, yeah, shoots in LA. It's a good, positive. The judges are funny and nice. It's not like a cruel show. Like even if you can't sing, they still like make you feel good about your performance.
Yeah, that's a good point. It is sort of like the stakes are low and it's just about fun.
Yeah.
Who do you think would be a great person to go on that show?
Anybody. I just like anybody who wants to go have fun, just go do it. It's such a cool, fun show.
What song did you not sing that you wish you had?
Oh, I love Sweet Caroline because that was sort of my football, like, at all my football games in college, they play that song. That would have been fun. I don't know. I could have got down with some more country, I think.
You like country music?
Yeah. I think that suits my voice better too. But the songs that they gave me were good too.
Have you listened to Beyonce's new album?
I have.
What do you think?
I really like it.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. The one that goes, I'll be your shotgun rider with Miley. It's my favorite.
Is it? I know. Miley has one of like the most
daughter
interesting.
Is good.
Yeah. I like Protector.
Protector's great
too. Oh my God, Jinx.
Yeah. She has some great ones.
Will you be singing to your future child?
Oh, for sure. Yes. And I have a terrible, terrible singing voice, but it did give me some confidence that I had some rhythm because
I
had to wear an in-ear and I had to hit notes and figure it like Jordan's very musically gifted. He was sort of my coach at home too.
Okay.
Which was a problem. He actually sat in on two of my lessons as well because he knew my vocal coach.
I think it would be more nerve-wracking to have my partner sit in than like a random stranger.
He's like correcting me. He's like, why are you? Yeah.
Oh my God, stop.
Like, but he's good. So like, of course, like I'm going to listen to him.
Fair enough.
He's got a song out. He has a song with Ben Harper.
No, he does not.
Yeah.
Well, because you know my friend Ben Sheehan, don't you?
Yeah. I just went to Jackie's show.
I know I couldn't go because of work. I saw you posted it, which was very sweet of you. Ben Sheehan and I met on technically my wife and my like second real date.
Oh, wow.
Because they had been friends for so long and I went over as like the new girl to meet everyone.
Yeah.
And Ben, who's amazing, who works in politics, just like your husband, like sat around the table and sang. And I was just like,
he's the most musically gifted person I think I've ever seen.
No, he can pick up any song.
He came over to our house and would just sit on the piano and we're like, play this. And he'd play it. Be like a rap song to a rock song to a country song. Like, and he's like, I don't know that one. And he's like, here it is. And like, we'd play a little clip.
Yeah.
And like, go.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa.
It's Ben is nuts.
Some talented people out there in this world.
Especially in LA.
Ben is one of them. Yeah.
That must have been nerve wracking. What was your walkout song to your wedding? Can you share it?
Ooh. Yeah. It was Aretha Franklin. You're all that I want. Or all that I need.
All that I need. Yeah. That's it. You guys had a really beautiful wedding.
We had a handshake. We had the whole thing.
That's really sweet.
Yeah.
That's also the music, picking the music at the wedding for us was hard.
Yeah. Stevie Mackey did our music, which is great.
Oh my God. I love Stevie.
So Stevie did our music.
Wait, was Stevie also your vocal coach? No.
No. I don't know. He wasn't. So Stevie was our composer and Shalaya did the Aretha song.
That's wild.
Yeah. And we had strings. Jordan was like a visionary with what he wanted. He was very particular and they knocked it out of the park.
How did it feel after you got married, this whole journey? You're sitting there in the beautiful sun. I know so many people that were at your wedding. So you have all these amazing, eclectic people that love you and Jordan deeply. What did it feel like?
It was magical. It was so magical to be like sort of taken in and loved on. And I now get it because I didn't really want a wedding.
Why?
Because I just thought it was silly. I was like, we're spending all this money to throw a party. Like, we're good. And then Jordan sort of was like, I have so many people in my life that like want to celebrate us and kickstart our relationship off.
Yeah.
And our marriage off. And now I understood it after that weekend. I was like, oh, okay, this is something very special. And we just felt so loved and it was great. It was such a good weekend.
Does that mean you're going to have like a psycho, like gender reveal, huge baby shower?
Actually, I don't think we're doing a gender reveal.
Gender reveals are weird.
It's a thing of the past. We're good. We don't need to. We'll just let you know when we're pregnant. And then after that, I'm assuming when we announce that we're pregnant, we'll announce the sex of our child as well.
Yeah.
Because we'll know through IVF.
Yeah. The tool. I mean, we talked briefly about like being involved, you know, like I'm going to be caring. It'll be my egg as of now. That's the plan. And my wife and her involvement. Do you think having things like baby showers and doing those things, especially as two dads, like does that make you feel like do you need those traditional things or like?
I think so. I think it'll help us. And I think we'll include our surrogate in on that.
Okay.
We won't.
That's nice.
We're pretty private with who that's going to end up being just because like privacy.
No, 100%.
We are on the same page. We sort of put a game plan together. Like, you know, once we're pregnant, this is what we're going to do. And yeah.
That's exciting.
I know.
Well, I bet it'll be an amazing playlist.
Yeah. We're excited.
You'll have Stevie Mackey. For those of you who don't know Stevie Mackey, I've known Stevie Mackey for many, many years.
He's the best.
He's the best. He's a great follow. He's best friends with my patron saint, which is Jennifer Lopez, my best friend. And he's just wonderful. And so to have somebody like Stevie at your wedding, I expect him at the baby shower.
Yeah. Well, he's a busy guy.
I know. He is really busy. Yeah. He's like on a yacht with Jennifer like and Ben half the time.
I
think, you know, it's hard to see it when it's your life, but you being so visible, calm, kind, adventurous. I would say you're very adventurous.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how many people you've helped.
Thank you. So I appreciate it.
It's just so lovely to meet you.
Yeah.
Well, especially after I like stroked out in our DM exchange when I first met you years ago at the Aloe thing. And I was like, oh my God. Rachel's like, what's going on? I'm like, I don't know. I just like mumbo jumboed to that lovely Colton man from Bat. She's like, Liz, get off the internet. I'm like, I will. But we've all made it right in the world.
We have.
So
full circle moments.
Full circle moments.
We're here for it. Well, thank you for having me on.
Thank you.